Kia ora and welcome to Muffin Talk. Muffin Talk is a weekly radio program to which I invite guests to talk about their work and their passion for issues on community programs, social justice, Bible studies, or interfaith relations. Today I have invited Dr. Sajjad Naqvi to a Zoom recording for our broadcast. Sajjad, a warm welcome and hi to my radio program.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much for inviting me.
Dr. Sajjad Naqvi is originally from Pakistan and he is a practicing Muslim. His professional expertise is in biochemistry, biophysics, and molecular biology. Currently, he is employed by Unitech Institute of Technology. Sajjad, before I ask any other questions, I hear that you have a new year starting or your new year has just started. How is the tradition about the new year? Do you wish Happy New Year to Muslims?
Thank you very much for giving me this opportunity to share my thoughts. Regarding the new year in the Islamic calendar, the first month of our new year is the month of Muharram. And the month of Muharram is associated with some sort of grief and sadness. As many hundred years back, there was an incident that took place in the month of Muharram. And because of this, we Muslims generally start our new year with the remembrance and commemoration of those sad days. So in generally, we do not go with the Happy New Year. Rather, we give prayers and blessings to our fellow Muslim brothers and sisters.
And you hope that the following months will be happy months.
Yeah, definitely. Yes, the life goes with the, you know, sadness and the happiness. And this is all about the life. So we do have the days where we have festives and, you know, happiness. And we do have the days where we have the grief. So it's kind of, you know, commemorating and celebrating both happy occasions and the moment of grief.
Is it on a specific day or does it depend on the lunar calendar, the new year?
Yeah, it's a lunar calendar. The Islamic calendar is based on the lunar calendar. So, as I said, the first of Muharram is the beginning of the Islamic calendar. And the day that we commemorate the martyrdom of the grandson of the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, is according to the Islamic calendar, is the 10th of the month, the 10th of the Muharram. So based on the lunar calendar, that the 10th of the Muharram definitely changes and it goes throughout the year. So, yeah.
Thank you for this clarification. Sure. And while we are talking about clarifications, can you tell us a little bit more about your profession? Because I've just mentioned biochemistry, biophysics, and molecular biology. What is the difference between all these sciences?
That's a very good question. Like, if you look at the basic foundation, it's primarily the biological sciences, which actually offshoot all these different areas and the discipline. So my major is actually biochemistry, which is the study about the biochemical reactions going on within the living cell, whether it's a virus or a bacteria, or it goes up to the complex human cells. So any kind of chemical reactions going on within the cell, within the life, is under the biochemistry. And if you go further, like, you know, as you go further in the research, then you have different fields emerged out. So biophysics and molecular genetics are the offshoots of the higher research spectrum of the biochemistry. So I started with the biochemistry as my major, and then I did my PhD in biophysics, which is an outer, spectrum of the biochemistry, and also the molecular biology, which is about the genes and the DNA and, you know, and all the very interesting topic for the people.
Well, you mentioned also now virus and bacteria. Can you quickly say the difference?
Like if you talk about the characteristics of the living organism, there are basic things that we classify something as a living. Like, for example, if someone is reproducing and someone is, multiplying, someone is growing, you know, growth, movement, these sort of characteristics, they exhibit the life. So virus is the simplest of, I would say, the organisms, which still lie between, you know, the non-living and the living, because if they are outside the cell, they behave like, you know, non-living, but as long as they go inside a cell, they become active. So it's a very tricky situation with the virus. And bacteria is particularly a cell, actually. It's a single cell which exhibits all the characteristics of any living organism.
Okay. Oh, well, that's really interesting, because they often say that biochemistry has become the foundation for understanding all biological processes. And as you say, bio is life. Mm. So how do you explain it from your faith perspective?
Just let me clarify, because I'm not something that I would classify myself as a religious person, but I do have my religious belief, which I practice. So what I know from my limited knowledge in the perspective of the faith, that every living organism, as I mentioned, right, starting from the virus up to the most complicated of the human beings, there are signs, as mentioned in the Quran, that if you look around yourself in the universe, you will have definite signs for someone who is behind that creation. So if you look at the simplest of the virus to the complex of the human body, that how these cells function and how they perform their activities, that clearly reflects you with the indication of someone behind this whole system who has created the system and who has, you know, given the life to all the living organisms. In terms of the biochemistry is foundation, because biochemistry deals with a very important molecule. We call it proteins. And in the recent research, protein has been studied a lot. And it has been found that most of the biological processes, most of the, you know, the current diseases and disorders in the human body and other living organisms, they must have some sort of involvement with the proteins. So a lot of studies being, you know, done on the proteins, that how these proteins behave within our body. What happened if protein is malfunctioned or it's not performing its function? How it's going to relate with any disease? For example, just give you one example of a very common disorder. We all know about Alzheimer's, it's a degeneration of the neuronal cells, the brain cells, and there's a key relationship of misfunction or malfunction protein with this disease. So this is just one example to give you an idea that now the proteins have been studied very extensively, and they come under the biochemistry. So that's why you can say the biochemistry is providing the foundation for all the emerging fields of biological sciences and the research going on.
So without biochemistry, you won't have pharmaceutics.
Yeah, you can say that, because in biochemistry, in general, I would say basic sciences, the research that has been done is actually providing the support for the next level of study, which is the pharmaceutical sciences, because what has been done in the basic sciences will provide the foundation for someone to develop a molecule or a drug or a vaccine, you know, to cure a disorder or a disease. So yeah, it's the second step. The basic sciences, they are the first step, they are the ground level, you know, research. And based on that, the next step is the applied one, where the pharmaceutical companies and, you know, all these, they develop the drugs and they develop the different molecules for the treatment of different diseases.
Mm-hmm. Well, during these last couple of years with a raging global pandemic, the everyday public has been exposed to comments and discussions on COVID-19. And I think that scientists who until then used to work mainly in the background, like you say, in the laboratories, suddenly were searched after professionals for the mainstream media. Yet they were often contradicting each other. Isn't science based on pure facts?
Well, like this, I consider that as a beauty of science, that where you have the contradictions. And I just extend my topic. It's not only the signs, but in every walk of life, you may have differences based on your own research and the data that you collected. So, and I think that's the beauty in the science as well. Like you might have seen that a research that has been done 10 years back with the specific data and the evidences might have been turned out by someone else who do another aspect and find out something new or something novel. So I don't see that as a contradict. I do believe that people do have their own area of expertise where they do work, and they may have difference of opinion. But as long as their opinion is supported by the data and is supported by the evidence, it is always welcomed in science. So, yeah, because this topic has been affecting the wider community, and it became the you know, under the discussion of the mainstream media, that's why we see those conflicts and different theories being highlighted so much. But I personally believe that it has been there since the science has started. Like, you know, people have difference and conflicts, and, you know, as long as I said it's based on the data, it's based on the evidence, it's fine.
Yeah, it's just, as I said, it's been new that the scientists are in front of the mainstream media, and your many countries bring up their children as believe what the doctor says. And then you have doctors who say the opposite. That is certainly confusing if you have no idea. If you can discuss with it, then it's not a problem. But if you have no idea and you rely on the science, that's a bit difficult.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I would add on one point to this. Like, again, this is, you know, we always have the downside and the good side of, you know, every aspect. So having this accessibility to the information through the social media, it does have good aspect, but it does have something that is not good for us. And that's what you mentioned, actually, you know, when you got the opportunity to express your views publicly, and you know, the people who are the audience doesn't have that background, it could be damaging as well. So, like, you know, that's the reason that why we have got so much confusion around that. And that's what it is like. But, you know, people have to do their own research, and they should have to connect with the people who they believe that they are providing the right information, you know.
Mm-hmm. And we understand that the current pandemic has spread much more than other diseases in the last 100 years, at least. And hindsight, there are many people who now judge the early reactions to the pandemic. Can you name one decision that you wish the world governments would have taken differently? Or better or worse, I don't know.
I kind of partially agree with this. Like, you know, if you just compare with the last 100 years, but even if you go a little back, there were like pandemics, and there were hundreds of people and thousands of people have been affected. So I don't see COVID much different from them. But yeah, definitely, if something has been happened 200 years back, the way the information was communicated was not the same as we have now. So I see that's the main difference. And in terms of the more responsible attitude by the governments or by the World Health Organization or any other forum that actually deal with this, in my humble opinion, I believe that the role of the social media for the propagation of information must have been taken into consideration, because this uncontrolled information, where you have got a lot of information not trustworthy, not valid, not supported by the data, or maybe having different objectives behind that, has created a lot of chaos, actually. So I do believe that, yeah, the problem was there. The problem is still there. We do have to have the remedies for that. We do have to have the prevention for that. And we do have to have the treatment for that. There is no debate about that. But the, you know, the magnitude of the concern and the magnitude of, I would say, the chaos created because of that so-called, you know, flood of information. If the governments would have taken consideration into this and not creating a lot of fear among the people, that would have been a much better approach, because the problem was there and is there. But this fear factor and a lot of over concern, which might have result, or which we may say in future, that would have effect on the mental well-being. That's, in my concept, is it's something that must be taken into consideration in a better way.
Definitely, social media does have advantages and disadvantages, because in traditionally the journalists have to do some research before they publish something, but with social media you don't know who's publishing it for what purpose, and then you can do a lot of manipulation with pictures and videos, as we know. It's not so easy. But the other point, one of the recommendations that was across the board, I think, was regarding keeping hygiene. And when we think of religions, we must realize that most religions use certain rituals as of purity, of cleansing body and soul. Can you give me an example of how this applies to Islam?
Well, in Islam, the cleanliness of both, in terms of the physical cleanliness and in terms of the spiritual cleanliness, is of the paramount importance. And as is one of the narrations from the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, is that the cleanliness is half of your faith. So I think the Islam clearly indicates the importance of this aspect of the cleanliness. As I said, it's both the physical and the ritual one. And we do have, you know, our aspects of the physical cleanliness. If something that touches your clothing or your prayer area or your body, which needs to be purified, which needs to be removed. So here comes the aspect of the physical cleanliness. And, you know, we have different tools to do this physical aspect of the cleanliness. And beside that, we have the spiritual aspect of the cleanliness, which include some rituals, some activities, like we do the ablution, you know, before the prayers, and there are other aspects. And even though doing some prayers and performing different prayers would have the impact of the ritual cleanliness as well. So Islam has always given a lot of emphasis on this aspect of cleanliness. And if you look at with the lens of the recent signs, we see that, you know, the cases like in this pandemic or in any other diseases, the cleanliness can minimize the chances of a spread of these things. So the scientifically, it has been proven as well. While on the religious side, there's always been an emphasis on the cleanliness. Like, it's been that in the history that at the time of the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, when there was an spread of any kind of a pandemic, the best strategy at that time has always been that you stay wherever you are. So that's what the modern science say, that you contain. So I think these things, they sync on the same line, actually. And in Islam, there is much focus on the cleanliness aspect of both physical and the spiritual cleanliness.
So when you say stay where you are, that means you're not going on a pilgrimage if you are not healthy.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Like, I would clarify this here, like, based on the the ruling in the current pandemic, especially in the COVID, all the big scholars, when they have been approached about that regarding, you know, what's your say on this disease and about the treatment, about the vaccination, they always refer them to the subject expert, who are the doctors. So, like, you know, every field has got their own experts. So we have to follow the advice of the experts, what experts are saying. So definitely any kind of pilgrimage or any other worship that involves sort of a congregational, you know, thing where you have a spread of such disorder, yes, absolutely, it is forbidden to do that if you have the fear of spreading that, disease or that bug. And I won't say only that's forbidden, but sometimes being considered as haram, because you became the reason for spreading something, and that could have other kind of, obligations. So, yeah, absolutely.
What is haram? You just mentioned haram. What is it?
In something which is forbidden, strongly forbidden, like an act which you do, which is forbidden, So if you have done that, you will have the consequences in terms of, the repercussion of that. It's not allowed to do that. So, our scholars were very clear on that first of all, we have to seek advice from the subject experts. So what the subject experts are giving an advice on this, that's the best advice that you have to take on. And secondly, if there is a chance of a spread of this bug or virus or any other disease by doing certain activities, you have to restrict those activities, because by no means you would become the tool for spreading the bug.
Mm. I think that's also something that many religions agree with. Many religious leaders asked to follow the recommendations from the governments, because the governments had their top health specialists.
Yeah, recommendations coming from the specialists. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And when you look into the history of Islam, you had also a lot of, yeah, like in Christianity and in Judaism, there have been a lot of diseases, and it's been the Islam has spread around the world, and of course there has always been somewhere diseases. Mm. And the other thing that I'm wondering is, what do you do when you try to keep purity and you live in a country that has a real lack of water? Is there some recommendation for Muslims?
Yeah, we do have, like, as I said earlier on, that I do not consider myself as the right person for giving these kind of recommendation, because this is not actually my piece of cake. But up to my own little knowledge, just I can communicate some information. It's like, we do have different levels where we can do the purity or the cleanliness. So there are certain objects, by default, they have the capacity to purify something. Mm-hmm. The best of that is the water, of course. But beside water, the purification or the cleanliness can be obtained by certain other objects, like it can be done by the sunlight. Mm. It can be done by the dust, the sand, particles. So in certain cases, when we do not have the water available for doing ablution, we do have an alternative for that. That is called tayammum. That's a different aspect of doing the ablution by the dust. So yes, there are alternatives other than water. If the water is not available, then there are other alternatives for the for attaining the cleanliness and the purity, both physical and spiritual.
Mm. Thank you very much for that clarification. Yeah. There's a lot to learn, and I think that some listeners, for them it will be all new, and also with the I don't know many people who know here in New Zealand about the Islamic New Year, and mm-hmm. That it starts with a sad occasion, mm-hmm. but then you ask for the blessings for the coming months.
Yeah.
That's what I understand.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about how for this new year. We're coming to the end of the interview, but I would like to know a little bit more about how you combine the new year with this, with the prayers and the blessings and the grieving, the mourning.
Yeah, as I mentioned that, in order to understand how this start of the new year takes place, we have to go a little back in the history about the incident, actually what that incident was and how it happened. And then we understand how we are, commemorating this. As I mentioned earlier, that it was after approximately 50 years after the demise of the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, his grandson Imam Hussein, with his companion and the family members, they were brutally martyred on the land of Karbala, and that the land of Karbala is in Iraq. And it is one of the very, very important site of the pilgrimage for the Shia Muslims. And let me add on, not only the Shia Muslims, but a large number of other Muslims, the Sunni Muslims, and even some non-Muslims, they do visit the shrine of Imam Hussein. Because at that time, when he stood up for justice. He stood up for against oppression. So the slogan was very much clear that why he stood up. So that's why the movement of the Karbala, the movement of Imam Hussein, was against the oppression. So that's why it's very important to remember that, you know, activity or incident in order to revive ourselves and to prepare ourselves that the event that took place, you know, hundreds and hundreds of years back is still valid, because it will remain valid, because whenever there is an oppression, then someone has to raise voice against that oppression. So this kind of lesson is actually associated with the event of Karbala. So now what we do is like we commemorate every year this event by doing lectures, ceremonies, where different scholars, they come from all across the globe and they deliver lectures on the event itself. They deliver the lectures on the reasons why that incident took place. They give lectures to explain that how they combat against the oppression. And the most important part is like how we are going to apply those values in the current time, because that's the most important thing. It's not just merely commemorating that took place 1400 years back. It's about the real application. So what was the reason why that even took place, and what we can learn from that? So in order to get this last part, you know, what we can learn, we need to revive and, you know, commemorate it again and again. So that's how the generation after generation and after generation, this message will continue. And if you search on the social media or Google, you will find out that for the Muslims, the largest, you know, gathering for the Muslims is in Mecca on the pilgrimage of the Hajj. But in terms of the number of people coming, the largest gathering is becoming the Arba'een, which is the 40th day of the martyrdom of Imam Hussein. And millions of people gathered every year in Iraq. So it's just kind of their love and association and the sympathy with the Imam, and just to, you know, revive their own faith by just preparing themselves for something that if something bad happened in these days, we should, you know, raise our voice against the oppression. So that's how we revive and we commemorate every year.
Thank you very much. I was just wondering if somebody who is not a Muslim wants to acknowledge this event towards a Muslim, what would the person say? What would be a good way?
As I said, like, you know, there could be different ways of, you know, expressing your views. In my understanding, the best is like when you study something in the history and you try to find out what actually happened, you have a more better clarity, and you will understand that what this incident or event was all about. But as long as, you know, as I said, that if you just search on the Google, you will find out a large number of Christian faith people, and from the Judaism, from the Hinduism, they also go to Iraq every year just to, you know, show their, you know, support, just to show their sympathy with what the other Muslims are doing. So it's kind of like not a religious base only, it's kind of a global kind of a thing where you have, you know, which combine all people from different faith, different culture, different religion, different languages to one common objective of, you know, raising voice against oppression. So if someone is joining hands in this, I think that's the best way of, you know, conveying your message for this.
Thank you very much. Thank you so much, Sajjad.
You're welcome.
It's really interesting. I've learned a lot in this half an hour. And I wish you
Thank you very much. Thank you very much for giving me this opportunity to express my views. And so nice of you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And for our listeners on the radio, Titi Pona, Move, Study and Joy is having another evening presentation on Zoom with Professor Thomas O'Loughlin from Ireland and Brother Kieran Finn from Auckland on Monday, the 22nd of August, 7 to 8:30 p.m. The topic is Mary of Nazareth, her sacred life and her human life. All events are on my website at www.studyjoy.nz. And kia kaha and keep safe. Thank you.
Out there, oh, peace is calling.